back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Carrie Mayer, and she is out with a brand new novel, The Paris Bookseller. It is available everywhere, and Carrie, this is fantastic because it's the 100th anniversary of the publication of James Joyce's Ulysses, and so you've taken us back to 1919 Paris, where this kind of all began. So can you set this up for us? The Shakespeare and Company bookstore, it sounds like a place I would love to visit, and I'm so jealous that you got to.
I know. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me this morning, Brian. I'm really excited to be here. And yeah, you know, I mean, what could be better? A bookstore in Paris in the 1920s, right? So, you know, the original Shakespeare and Company bookstore was opened by an American woman named Sylvia Beach in November of 1919. And it very quickly became the home away from home of the lost generation. You know, all those famous writers you know about, Gertrude Stein, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and, you know, Ernest Hemingway was a lifelong friend of hers. But also, she became very close to the writer James Joyce, and she published the very first edition of his novel, Ulysses.
And if someone was to go into this bookstore, we think of a Barnes & Noble or maybe some of our local bookstores now, what would they have seen in 1919 Sylvia Beach's bookstore?
This is a great question. Well, it couldn't have been more different from Barnes & Noble. It was tiny, first of all. It was tiny. And you know, also, I think something that is really not very well known about this store is that it was actually more library than store. Most of the writers who came to her had no money to spend on books, and so a huge portion of her space was devoted to a subscription library. So not a free library like we have here, but, you know, for a small amount of money, you could subscribe to her library and take out as many books as you wanted to take out. In addition to these sort of two parts of the store, there were also, she had these prized pages, by Walt Whitman hanging on her wall. She absolutely loved the poetry of Walt Whitman, you know, Leaves of Grass, The Song of Myself, all of that great stuff. And she also had a couple of sketches by William Blake, you know, the English poet and artist William Blake. So these are some of the things that you would have seen hanging on the walls in Shakespeare and Company.
Well, you write historical fiction, and so you're no stranger to this genre, but when you write it, you've written in some more contemporary, I call it more contemporary historical fiction. We're talking, you know, Princess Grace, Kennedy era, that type
right.
of thing. You have to get back
right.
into the 1920, not only the 1919, but in Paris. And so how do you put yourself in the mindset to determine a time and a place that's not really visceral to you?
Well, so the good news about Paris in the 20s is I've always been a little bit obsessed with Paris in the 20s, you know, ever since I was a college student English major. So I've always sort of loved this period historically and from a literary perspective as well. So, Midnight in Paris, that great Woody Allen movie. But, you know, aside from that, in terms of like really serious research, you know, I read quite a number of books. You know, I revisited some books that I had read a long time ago, like Ernest Hemingway's Movable Feast, which is about being a young man in Paris during this time period. And I had the enormous privilege of getting to go to Paris in the early stages of my research for this novel. And that was, I had been to Paris before a long, long time ago. And so it was really helpful to kind of be boots on the ground, you know, in the neighborhood where the store existed and all of these people lived, and kind of just get to soak up that local color.
When you write a character in a novel, like a Sylvia Beach, if this was a truly fictional character, you would have to determine what this character's motivations are and why she does the things she does. Sylvia Beach is a real person, and so how did you get into her mindset to determine her motivations and her aspirations for the Shakespeare and Company bookstore?
So she published her own memoir in the 50s. It's called Shakespeare and Company. And actually, I discovered her memoir when I was in college, a young person obsessed with the 1920s. That was the first time I read it. And I was totally absorbed by her story. But at the time, I just kind of filed it away under good to know. But when I came to start writing this book, I obviously reread that very carefully, so to sort of get some of her ideas and her ways of speaking kind of in my mind. I also read some of her letters, especially the letters that she wrote to James Joyce. And You know, I just tried to read as much as I could to get a sense for her outlook on life, some of the cadences of her speech and things like that, so that I could write as authentically about her as possible.
It seems against the grain of what we've been taught in history about a female business owner in this time period. And, I mean, in the town I live in, it just wouldn't have been heard of. But how shrewd of a businesswoman was Sylvia Beach?
You know, I think she would say she wasn't shrewd at all. she was really very humble and self-effacing. But, you know, what she really was more than shrewd was, I think, she was bold and she was brave. You know, there she was. You know, she actually gets to Paris in 1917, toward the end of the First World War. She kind of stumbled into this French-language bookstore and lending library called La Maison des Amis de Vivre, owned by another French woman named Adrienne Monnier. And Sylvia falls in love with this store and sees her own, like, a possibility for her own life in this store. And, you know, just a few years later, there she is opening her own English-language bookstore and lending library, Shakespeare and Company, just around the corner from La Maison. And so, you know, she was really brave. I mean, she took a huge risk in doing that. And, you know, the risk paid off. The store did very, very well. You know, originally she thought that she was really opening the store for the French intellectuals that she met in Adrienne's store, who were very hungry for literature in English, that it was very hard for them to get their hands on. But, you know, within just a year or two, I mean, American and British writers who were expatriating to Paris at the time started coming to her store. And so that was really when Shakespeare and Company became like the home of the lost generation, I like to say.
I'm talking with Carrie Mayer about her brand new novel, The Paris Bookseller. Carrie, something else going on in Paris in this time period is the end and the after effects of World War I. And so how did that play into not only your narrative, but into Sylvia Beach's life?
Yeah, you know, this was such an important and, you know, just wonderful time for literature. You know, there were a number of avant-garde literary journals being published in out of New York and London and Paris. And, you know, they were all publishing what they thought of at the time as, like, the new writing. and they really did believe that they were, and it's now what we call modernism, right? But the writers who were doing this work at the time knew that they were doing something bold and new and different, that they were really trying to remake their world from the ashes that was World War I, right? I mean, like, World War I was just brutal on, you know, every possible level, and everyone was trying to recover from it. And so the writers and artists of this period were doing that at their desks, you know, with words. And, you know, James Joyce's novel Ulysses, that Sylvia ends up publishing in 1922, was really in the vanguard of that movement. The novel was being serialized in a one of these literary journals out of New York called The Little Review. And it was hugely controversial. It was suspected by the New York Society for the Suppression of Vice of being obscene, and the Society for the Suppression of Vice used the post office to seize copies of the Little Review that the Ulysses was being serialized in and incinerate them. So it was an interesting time to be an artist because, especially in the United States, because of, you know, the censorship that was happening, which is one of the reasons why so many of them, the writers, decamped to Paris, where there just wasn't that level of censorship and oversight.
A lot of us also think about the Great Depression as being a truly American thing, but I did too until I read your book. How did the Depression affect Paris?
You know, the Depression, is interesting. You know, the 1930s, which my book does go into about the mid-1930s, Paris became a refuge for, you know, Jewish immigrants from Germany who were escaping persecution in their country, also from Poland, and also Spanish nationals who were trying to escape the war in Spain. So Paris, you know, really changed again in the 1930s. That was in the 1930s, a lot of the American writers of the 20s were kind of going home. They had lost lots of money, as everybody was losing money. So the Americans were going back home to save money, and so Paris was getting filled up with European refugees and lots of artists at the time. So it just changed the face of Paris again. But it was no less artistic. It was just a different moment.
Was Carrie Mayer kind of a tragic hero in as much as with Ulysses, she did this great thing for the literary world by publishing James Joyce's work, but then, of course, the competitive nature comes in, the market does what it does, and Joyce gets wooed away to a different publisher. And so how does that play into her decision and then maybe her expected or unexpected fallout, unintended consequence?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Sylvia put her heart and soul and bank account into publishing the numerous editions of Ulysses that she published. And she also, you know, not incidentally, really fought piracy. You know, when Ulysses, after she had published a few editions, this American publisher named Samuel Roth started pirating Ulysses in the United States, which effectively meant he mopped up some type and started selling a very cheap edition. But Joyce and Sylvia saw no proceeds from that edition. And so that was really one of the impetuses for Sylvia and Joyce thinking about whether or not an American publisher for future editions would be the right idea. I don't want to spoil the book too much, but it's a very interesting and it was a very interesting and tough set of decisions that the two of them had to make. You know, Sylvia was deeply financially and personally invested in this novel, and it was really hard for her to let it go. But she really did also want what was best for the book. She really believed that this book, by the 30s, Sylvia already knew that the book had changed the world and changed literature because, like, the proof was in the pudding. I mean, you know, by the early 30s, you know, William Faulkner is writing in a style that's very much like, you know, Ulysses. You know, so Virginia Woolf, even though she had sort of poo-pooed the novel when it first came out in the 20s, was also being influenced by it. I mean, its influence was everywhere in literature. So Sylvia knew that she had done sort of an amazing thing and standing up and publishing it. But she ultimately really wanted what was best for the book.
Well, it's just an amazing trip down, I wouldn't say memory lane, because this is all new to me, but it's a trip back into a time and place that not a lot of us are familiar with, and it's just an amazing novel. The book is The Paris Bookseller by Carrie Mayer. The book's available everywhere. Carrie, another fantastic book, and thanks again for joining me to talk about it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.